The Conservative Political Action Conference today announced that President Donald Trump will speak there on Friday. Over the weekend, CPAC, as it's called, made a similar announcement confirming another speaker, Milo Yiannopoulos, the controversial Breitbart editor and far-right commentator who is scheduled to address the conference this week. Yiannopoulos, who is openly gay, has made his name making provocative and often offensive comments about Muslims, women, transgender people, and others. But a video that surfaced over the weekend was a step too far for some. It shows Yiannopoulos condoning sexual relationships between adults and young teenagers on the Drunken Peasants podcast on YouTube.
People are messy and complex, and actually in the homosexual world particularly, some of those relationships between younger boys and older men, the sort of coming-of-age relationships, the relationships in which those older men help those young boys to discover who they are and give them security and safety and provide them with love and a reliable and sort of a rock where they can't speak to their parents. Some of those relationships are some of the most...
It sounds like pre-molestation to me.
Yiannopoulos continued with more graphic language that we're not going to play on the air. When others on the podcast accused him of defending pedophilia, this is what he said.
You're misunderstanding what pedophilia means. Pedophilia is not a sexual attraction to somebody 13 years old who is sexually mature. Pedophilia is attraction to children, who have not reached puberty.
Well, today, the American Conservative Union revoked the invitation to Yiannopoulos because of that video, but said in a statement, "We initially extended the invitation knowing that the free speech issue on college campuses is a battlefield where we need brave conservative standard bearers." They're referring to the University of California, Berkeley's decision earlier this month to cancel Yiannopoulos' appearance on campus following violent protests. Protesters said Yiannopoulos' words are hate speech and not free speech. Joining us now via Skype to talk about hate speech and how it's treated under the law is Margaret Russell. She's a professor at Santa Clara University School of Law. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much.
And is there a legal definition of hate speech?
There actually is not, and that may be surprising. However, the Supreme Court has actually taken a number of interesting cases in which it has looked at laws that have tried to define hate speech or otherwise curtail it by limiting it in other categories.
And what did they find in those cases?
Well, let me mention a couple of recent ones, even though the First Amendment speech jurisprudence is a long and interesting story that actually starts in the 19-teens during World War I. The basic principle that the Supreme Court has wrestled with under the Free Speech Clause is the principle of not punishing speech because of its message or its viewpoint. That in itself is a violation of the principles of the Constitution. But, for example, in certain areas like obscenity or child pornography or incitement to violence, the court has made exceptions based on the dangers that those impose. Hate speech has not been considered to be part of any of those categories in and of itself. So, for example, about 5 years ago, in 2011, the court decided a very famous case involving the Westboro Baptist Church, which it pickets at funerals and was on the sidewalk outside of a funeral, uttering words and carrying signs and badgering and using epithets, anti-gay epithets. And they were sued for intentional infliction of emotional distress. And the Supreme Court said that it is not possible to take into account their viewpoint, their animus, their hatred, essentially, in punishing. And so that means that under the First Amendment, you really have to have another law regulating conduct that's broken. So, you know, if you are beating somebody up, obviously you can be charged with a hate crime if you're doing that with the intention of targeting them because of their race. But if you're walking beside that person on the sidewalk with a sign or handing out flyers that reflect hatred toward that race, that is protected.
So what you're saying is that there are limits on free speech. The Supreme Court has found in certain cases that there are limits on free speech, but none of the cases that have been brought actually involve what you would consider hate speech. That's not the reason why there's a limit.
Well, yes and no. The Supreme Court has looked at but not defined hate speech in a couple of cases. One of them actually is the Snyder versus Phelps Westboro Baptist Church case. In the area of race, ethnicity, St. Paul actually had passed in the 1980s a what they called a bias-motivated crime ordinance. And this ordinance was specifically intended to allow someone to sue if they were the victim of hate speech. And the Supreme Court struck down that law because it singled out certain viewpoints, hateful viewpoints, and the Supreme Court said that the First Amendment does not allow that, although you can always craft a law that is applicable across the board. Let's say if you're assaulting someone or threatening them or harassing them, that's definitely conduct that's not protected under the First Amendment. But if you're punishing it because of the viewpoint, that is always unconstitutional.
Well, so then that brings up the question of where the line is drawn about if you're harassing somebody, if you get up and make a broad statement about a group of people and say, I think all of these people should die, is that hate speech? Is that harassing somebody, or is it because it's to a broader group that it wouldn't be considered hate speech?
Well, certainly there are situations in which a person could be arrested, not for saying that, not for the message, and this is sort of where the subtler lines are drawn, but because of the presence of other factors. The Supreme Court has said if someone is inciting violence. So regardless of viewpoint, if someone is speaking in a way and in a context in which they're encouraging violence that could be imminent and they are intentionally trying to bring that about, that is known as incitement, and that is not protected speech.
There's also a distinction, isn't there, when you're talking about one person in particular, fighting words?
Yeah, so fighting words is an interesting example of an area of law in which the case that defined it has not been overturned, but it hasn't particularly been followed very clearly. So fighting words in the 1940s in a Supreme Court case called Chaplinsky was defined as words that inflict immediate injury or tend to incite a breach of the peace. And fighting words has been used as the rationale for hate speech codes, hate speech regulations, on the basis of the argument that hateful words do inflict psychic, emotional, and sometimes lead to other kinds of injuries. But fighting words itself requires a face-to-face, a direct confrontation. It requires a setting and a set of facts that wouldn't apply across the board to regulating hate speech.
What about slander, saying a false statement that harms someone's reputation, and libel, publishing a false statement to harm someone's reputation, which are not protected under the First Amendment? How do they differ from what some might call hate speech?
There are several different areas of the law, including slander and libel, in which speech alone, because of the harm it does, can actually be regulated, right? And it's not because of the viewpoint of the speech. It's because it damages injury, reputation, and it is factually false. Hate speech, most of hate speech that I'm aware of is, it's opinion. It may be despicable opinion, but they're not false statements of fact. And even hyperbole, such as saying, all blanks are pigs, all blanks are monkeys, right? That's considered to be hyperbole, and it's not an assertion of fact that could be the subject of a slander or a libel lawsuit.
How often do questions of hate speech get brought before the courts? How often does this make it all the way to a judge?
Since the most recent decisions of the United States Supreme Court, and by recent, I mean the so-called RAV versus City of St. Paul case in 1992, and a cross-burning statute case called Virginia versus Black, and then the Westboro Baptist Church case. I think the law is pretty clear, at least to the extent that hate speech is not considered by itself to be unprotected under the First Amendment. So if people want to enact laws, or if people want to prosecute people who violate the law, the prosecution can't be based on the viewpoint of the person. It has to be based on the underlying crime.
The underlying crime that is not related to speech. The underlying crime, you're saying, being something that maybe happens because of the speech.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So even in fighting words, right, the reason why fighting words still exist to any extent, although it's not brought up as often, is because of the damage, not because of the particular words uttered, right? And if you think about hate crimes, and many jurisdictions do have hate crimes ordinances, according to the Supreme Court in Wisconsin versus Mitchell, have to punish a particular crime like assault or battery or threats, and then allow for an enhancement if the motive is to beat somebody up or commit the crime based on their race. I know that that sounds like such a one of those legal niceties, but the difference is basically that when you criminalize, consistent with the First Amendment, what you're criminalizing is the conduct.
Not the speech.
Not the speech.
That's Margaret Russell, who's a professor at Santa Clara University School of Law. Margaret, thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.